From awaytogarden.com and robinhoodradio.com, this is A Way to Garden with Margaret Roach, your weekly invitation to dig in and grow.
The virtual seed shopping continues. Welcome to another episode of the Away to Garden annual winter seed series, when I virtually shop the catalogs with various expert friends and get growing advice too. Today's guest is Joseph Tokanovich, author of books on backyard plant breeding and also rock gardening, among his many botanical interests. Joseph, a passionate flower grower, wants to confess that he has gone on a bit of a sunflower binge this year, and will learn the best of the old and new ones, plus about other easy flowers to grow. But first, these messages.
Underwriting support from Timber Press, your go-to resource for books in gardening and nature. Whether you're a new gardener, a professional at the top of your field, or a reader interested in the wonders of the natural world, their books are there to help you grow. TimberPress.com. Underwriting support from High Mowing Organic Seeds, the first independently owned farm-based seed company proudly serving organic gardeners and farmers with 100% organic and non-GMO vegetable, herb, and flower seeds. HighMowingSeeds.com/awaytogarden.
You may recall previous confessionals on this program from today's guest, Joseph Tokanovich, about his issues, shall we say, with gladiolus and hollyhocks. And now it seems that Joseph has declared 2018 his personal year of the sunflower. We'll talk about growing them and many of his irresistible varieties to try and best catalogs for sunflowers and many other easy flowers. So welcome back, Joseph. How are you?
I am great. How are you?
Okay, good, good, good. So you're in your new home in Virginia, where you were used to being a Midwestern gardener, and you're paging through the catalogs madly and ordering everything.
Yes, exactly.
Well, that's good. So, yeah, it's exciting. Must be exciting, the idea of starting your first year in a new place in a new zone.
Yeah, I don't know what I'm doing.
Good.
Which is fun, and I'm buying a lot of seed because I think seed is like the best way to try things in a new zone because it's a low investment. So I'm trying a bunch of stuff, and if it dies, you know, I'm out a few bucks. I'm not going to worry about it.
Did you order any new catalogs sort of geared to the Mid-Atlantic or even the South that you hadn't maybe risked buying from before or whatever? Or
well,
same palette.
I stumbled on a website called Florida Wildflowers.
Uh-oh.
Which maybe went a little far south. But yeah, that's actually when I started my whole sunflower thing, because I was looking for something called the beach sunflower that's native down there. And I found a bunch of interesting, you know, southeast native plants to try from them.
Oh. So you have widened your catalog choices a little bit already.
A little bit, yes.
Oh, boy. Uh-oh. I can see this is going to be dangerous. So, you know, sort of based on the adventures in your popular book, Plant Breeding for the Home Gardener, you know, it's not enough for you, at any rate, to grow things from the catalogs, but you sort of always tinker with them, and you try crosses and selections, and you save your own seed, like you did with, you have with, or you save, in some cases, it's not literally seed, but like with the gladiolus and the hollyhocks. So I suspect this sunflower thing that you've told me about and you're going to tell us about today is sort of headed in that direction, is it? I mean, you just said one from that's native to Florida. Are you like collecting genetics, so to speak, in the form of seed from different species and varieties of sunflowers?
Yeah, I mean, I like sunflowers a lot, and I've grown a few of them for years because if you have a bunch of different varieties, they'll interbreed really freely,
yeah,
and they tend to self-sow. So once you collect different ones, even if they self-sow, you collect seed, you often produce enough hybrids and fun stuff to select from. So I've grown for a while Helianthus argophyllus, which is the silverleaf sunflower.
My favorite of all.
It's beautiful because the leaves look like almost like lamb's ears, and then you get the sunflowers. And it quickly interbred with, I think, my neighbor's sunflowers. I don't know. I wasn't growing other ones. but it's then I started getting different colors than that. And so now I'm wanting to add in more species and diversity.
Okay.
Just to see if I can pump up the excitement there.
Okay. So for people who don't know that one, like when I grow it, I have to start it way, way ahead of time to put out good-sized plants because I'm in a, you know, short, like you used to be in the Midwest, a short frost-free season relatively. And And but then it would turn into this like multi-branched. It wasn't just one main stem and a big head on top. It was like a had a lot of different arms and smaller, many smaller sunflowers and the silvery felted foliage. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. And I've seen once it starts hybridizing with my regular annual sunflowers, it starts blooming earlier because the pure species bloom really late.
It does. And that's why I have to start it super early. Otherwise, I don't get anything but stems, you know.
So, I like the hybrids because they start blooming earlier. And I know if Peace Seedlings offers a similar hybrid mix, which is hybrids with herbivores and regular
I was going to say that like it's like a population of them, right? It's like all different individuals. Yeah, it's great. It's a great one.
Which is really fun because then you can grow all this diversity and then pick out the ones you like best or the ones that perform the best in your particular climate conditions.
Okay. And become a crazy backyard plant breeder like Joseph.
Right.
Okay.
Absolutely.
So that's one.
Yeah. The other new one I'm adding this year is the beach sunflower, which is Helianthus stabilis. And I saw this, I don't remember where I was, somewhere in South Carolina, and it's a sunflower, but it grows flat along the ground like a ground cover.
Oh.
And it's a native along the sand dunes along the coast of Florida, which led me to my Florida seed source.
Okay. And there is a story behind this craziness.
And it's so cool because you just, like, the plant doesn't look like a sunflower, but then the flowers, you know, just classic sunflower blooms on this flat trailing thing. So I'm like, ooh, that's something different. I can't pass that up. So I got some seeds of that to try. I have no idea how they'll do for me, but we'll see.
So those are two species that are going to be in this beginning of a collection that's going to, you know, doing some crossing, and we'll see what happens. Have you also grown other sunflowers that sort of are named varieties of Helianthus annuus, I guess is what it would be. A lot of them are. Is that right?
Yeah, I have. This year I went for a lot of little short ones.
Oh, I've noticed that there are more of those. Yeah, so if we don't have a big space, yeah. Mm-hmm.
I've never grown them before, actually, and there's a lot of selections. Where's my seed list here?
I don't know. It's here somewhere.
I got one called a Pacino and Sunspot, which are little short ones. They'll only bloom at like 2 or 3 feet. I've always usually go for giant things, so I thought I'd mix it up this year and grow short ones.
What was the first one called?
Pacino, P-A-C-I-N-O.
Oh, like Al Pacino.
Oh, yeah, it should be Pacino.
Well, no, I don't know. I don't know. It could be anything, but I'm just saying it reminds me, because that's how I'll be able to remember it. So that and Sunspot, okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so those are little dwarf ones, which will be fun, and I'm hoping, again, if they cross to my other species, then might bring some early flowering genes into, because some of the species really want to get 8 feet tall and a million branches and then bloom right before frost.
go ahead, sorry.
The one thing I like to avoid, though, are F1 hybrid varieties. Usually I'm fine with F1 hybrids, but with sunflowers, the F1 hybrid varieties are usually male sterile, which means they don't produce any pollen, which it's often marketed as a good thing, as pollenless, because I guess, I don't know why that's supposed to be a good thing, but I don't like it because you can't breed with them and they're not as good food for the bees because they don't have any pollen for the bees to harvest.
So these are interesting flowers because what we think of as the flowers are this composite, it used to be called the composite family, or maybe still it is, the daisy flower family, the sunflower family, the composite family. I can't keep up with what we're calling it these days, but it's called composite because what we think of as the flowers, these sort of heads, they have two kinds of, they have a ray flower, the sort of things we think of as petals, and then the disc flower in the center, the disc flowers in the center. And so the pollen would be in the center, right? I mean.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So when you go, if you were to try to force a cross between two sunflowers, you'd be moving pollen from those many disc flowers in the center from one to the other. Do you ever do that with a sunflower? Do you ever force it manually?
I have a couple times, but I feel like usually the bees do it for me, and I let them have their way.
Okay.
And then I like having a lot of pollen around because it's good for all the lots of native insects. And
absolutely,
that is a major food source. So
it's
always nice when something pretty and also supports some of the native pollinators around me at the same time.
So for the type of thing you're doing, and also for the benefit of pollinators who would enjoy the pollen, the F1 hybrids are the ones that are not on your list. But basically, other than that, you're going to try a mixture of a couple of species, as well as some Helianthus annuus, some selections, some cultivars or varieties of that. Yeah, named ones.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. A little bit of everything.
Okay. Yeah, you know, there's so many things called sunflower. That's the other thing. Like, I used to always grow Tithonia, the Mexican sunflower, they call it commonly, but it's in a different genus. It's not Helianthus. Have you ever grown that?
No, I haven't. I've seen it in gardens a lot, but I've never actually tried it.
Yeah, it's this big, tall, with the big orange, sunflowery looking, sort of somewhere between a marigold, giant marigold, and a sunflower. I always loved it. And I mean, not that it could get involved in your breeding program, because, again, it's a different genus. But, you know, there are other things also called sunflowers like that. Having been looking in the flower catalogs in anticipation of talking to you, do you start your sunflower seeds for the ones you're trying? Are you going to start them indoors or in pots or in cells or direct sow? What are you going to do?
I usually sow them directly outside where they are going to grow.
Okay.
You can start them inside, but I always, if I can start stuff outside, I'd rather do that because I feel like it's so much easier. So I really try to reserve the stuff that I'm growing indoors under lights. The things like my tomatoes that really need that extra long season, because I feel like when you're inside, you have to worry about getting enough light and damping off and transplanting them.
Yeah.
And something, especially like a big fat seed like a sunflower or zinnias or cosmos, a lot of those things, I feel like it's just so much easier to just sow them directly outside, rather than messing with pots and lights and transplanting.
That's good to hear. Okay, good. So all you have to worry about is the occasional chipmunk if they have them in your new hometown.
Yeah. Chipmunks, crows also, if they can be pretty smart about finding seeds when they're starting to germinate.
Yeah, sometimes when I sow big seeds, even when I sow my peas in the spring, you know, sometimes I'll put like it's a piece of burlap or a piece of netting, just pin it down, you know, with some earth staples just temporarily over, before germination, I mean. You know what I mean? Just to sort of discourage.
Yeah.
Sometimes I do that as a preventive, you know, non-toxic preventive, rather than
going
out
that.
And screaming at the chipmunks, which, by the way, doesn't work.
No.
No.
Yeah, I learned that with corn, and the crows quickly learned that they followed my rows. They're smart enough to figure out that there was corn in a row, and they went right down the line. So, but yeah, cut a little netting or burlap works really well so they get up.
It's always a tip-off when you have 0% germination. Because I'm sorry, you can't possibly have failed that badly, Margaret. The seed could not have been 100% dead. You know what I mean? And you know someone's been through there, some demonic little creature trying to drive you nuts. Has systematically unsown all your seeds, every last one of them. So, So then you find them pretty easy. You direct sow them, and obviously they grow in the sun. In case people didn't know that. And then when you save seed at the end, so you don't really know who crossed with who the bee flew to first, second, third, in what order, and crossed with who. But what do you do? You like let the seed just ripen. You put bags over the heads. What do you do?
I wait until they're not quite ripe, actually, because once they're ripe, the birds just go nuts over them, and often I lose them all then. So often right when the sepals on the back of the seed head are starting to yellow, I'll cut off the whole seed head and bring it inside.
Okay.
And it'll finish drying down and ripening indoors.
Okay.
I do that with a lot of seeds I'm saving, is I harvest them actually just before they're ripe, because a lot of seeds, especially flower seeds, when they ripe, they tend to shatter. The seed pod opens up and they spill everywhere. So often when they're a little bit green is the easiest time to harvest them. Bring them in, put them in a paper bag, and then they can shatter at their leisure and nothing eats them.
So that's kind of a little bit about your sunflower adventure, and I hope we're going to be able to talk again about it as it evolves and see what happens, get some pictures or whatever later in the year. But have you been shopping for more flowers? Because, you know, you got me thinking when we talked about doing this program. I thought, oh, flowers, I should add more flowers. Because basically in my vegetable garden, I always have some calendulas, and I love Frank Morton's calendulas at Wild Garden Seed, for instance. He's a great calendula breeder, among many other things, and the Flashback series and others are just beautiful, and they're great companions for vegetables. But, you know, I don't have a flower garden per se. But, you know, I used to, in the old years, I used to grow lots of other things in there, too, at the ends of my vegetable beds, my raised beds. Are you growing, have you been looking at anything else? Zinnias or, I don't know, anything?
Well, I always grow a lot of zinnias, and this year's also, it's the year of the sunflowers / year of the sweet peas, I think.
Uh-oh, you're having a dual year of?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. All right. So sweet peas, well, that reminds me of our friend Marilyn Barlow at Select Seeds with all her passion for so many years for heirloom sweet peas and so forth.
Yeah.
So you've been collecting sweet pea seeds?
I've been collecting sweet peas and trying, because I'm now in a warmer zone, I tried sowing a bunch of them in the fall.
Oh.
Yeah. So normally, because sweet peas don't like the heat of the summer, so normally in the north, I had to start them indoors really, really early and place them out as soon as you possibly can so they have time to grow before it gets hot. Mm-hmm. But now I'm in zone 7, so I think I'm warm enough that they actually... So I planted them about October, I think, late October.
Mm-hmm.
And so far, so good. They're still alive. We hit like 6 degrees in this recent cold snap, and they're still alive. So that might be... So I'm interested to see how they perform. I have some I'm going to start indoors, too, for the spring, so I can compare fall versus spring sowing.
That's good. So you're going to try it both ways. That's great.
Yeah, I mean, that's because I don't know what I'm doing, as I said, in my new climate.
You do. You're just disoriented by being relocated. Yeah.
Yeah. But that's my strategy. And I think, again, I love doing from seed because it's easy to buy a packet of seeds. And so some indoors, some outdoors, put some in a drier spot, a wetter spot, like just plant them around in different ways. And then I can actually see what's going to do best in what conditions, you know, in my actual garden.
Where else have you found some interesting sweet peas to try?
Well, I ordered some from a place in England called Owl's Acres.
What's it called?
Owl, like the bird.
Oh, Owl's Acres. Oh, crazy. I've never heard of it.
Apparently, they cater to, like, people who grow them for shows and exhibitions and stuff, which is, I'm not that devoted. But they have a huge, huge list of all these different really cool ones. Sweet peas are their specialty.
Uh-huh.
And they also have some interesting species that I hadn't grown. So I grew one called Lathyrus chloranthus, which is like a yellow-green color that looks cool.
Huh.
So I'm trying some other species of those just to see. I'm hoping some of the other species might be a little more heat-tolerant and keep up going longer through the summer, but we'll find out.
Okay. All right. So we're on an adventure there, too. Okay.
As always.
And you said you like zinnias. I mean, the world of zinnias, I mean, there's such a diversity. And I have to say, I love either the single color where you can, like, pick your favorite color or two, like the Bennery. I first saw those a million years ago at Johnny's Selected Seeds, which has a great assortment of flower seeds as well, right?
Yeah, definitely.
And you know, I love the orange ones and the green, the short sort of chartreuse ones, and I would grow those, you know, every year for a while. But I'm kind of loving the old-fashioned style, you know, the multicolored kind of that have like mahogany and goldy kind of colors.
Yeah,
I mean? I don't even know the names of some of them, but
I think that's the other species, Hagiana.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah,
Hagiana. Yeah, and so I'm kind of loving those even more at the moment. But I don't know, are you growing any zinnias this year down there?
I'm growing some, and I like to collect, save my own seeds, so what I have is sort of an evolving strain of my favorites.
Mm-hmm.
One that's really cool is, if you can find it, is a strain called Whirligig.
Whirligig?
Which is actually a hybrid between the standard zinnias and then the Hagiana that you mentioned that have the multicolored
mm-hmm.
petals.
Mm-hmm.
And they have some really interesting multicolored, like, individual petals with different shades on the same petal that can be really, really cool.
Whirligig. Okay.
Whirligig. It's a little hard to find, and I don't think the strain has been maintained very well, so it's not many doubles. It's mostly singles. But there's really interesting color diversity there.
Mm-hmm. So that's another one. Aren't there some now that look like scabiosis or something? Is that,
yeah.
Did I make that up? No, I didn't make that up.
No,
that's a true
and I
thing.
Think, I'm trying to remember. I grew on a few. They've been around forever, but the old strains have not been maintained very well. I grew them, like, I don't know, 4 or 5 years ago, and I grew out like 20 plants, and only one of them actually had the form as advertised.
Yeah, but I'm seeing more people have them now because I think more colors have been cleaned up and are being brought out. So that's another thing to look for. Yeah.
Yeah, I think they've been reselected, and it's nice. This is when I look at a catalog like Johnny's Selected Seeds or Select Seeds, because they don't list everything. They list stuff that they've actually tested and is good.
Right.
So when I see it in their catalog, right, I know it's actually going to come true from seed. There's some other sources. Like, I like ordering from Stokes because they have a huge list, but they just list everything. You know, whether it's good
right.
or bad,
right,
it's just
right.
everything.
Right. Right.
And I like Select Seeds is a little more curated, I guess. And so when I see it in their her catalog, I think, okay, it's a good strain, and I'll try it again.
Yeah, I think the Scabiosa type ones that are whatever it is that's been brought out recently, I think they're called like Zinderella. I think that's what they are, Zinderella series. And I think there's like a pinkish color and a purple, or peach color and a purple color now. So that's kind of interesting. They're really different looking. Not your average everyday zinnia.
They look really cool.
And I'm always wanting to delve back into marigolds, which of course is where many of us began. If we began growing annual flowers frequently, that was the first one. Even when we were a kid, we might have grown, you know, a marigold.
Yeah. I grew a marigold the year I started kindergarten, my first plant I ever grew from the seed.
See? How did I know?
Yeah.
So I kind of want to delve into those, and I haven't in a long time. And there's really big ones, like Peace Seedlings has some really massive, big, you know, not those tiny little dwarf silly ones with the big heads on tiny little dumpy plants, but like big plants with big flowers. And then of course down to the the ones with the ferny foliage, that, you know, the cygnets and others that are little and have little flowers and ferny foliage. And anyway, I like them, and I even like the way they smell, to tell you the truth.
I love the way they smell. I was going to just say that some people hate them, but I love the way they smell.
So, you know, we have maybe 3-4 minutes, and I want to just kind of, you know, you mentioned that you've been on an adventure with native Floridian sunflowers. What about if we're wanting to grow more sort of native flowers, like whether they're perennial or annual or whatever? Do you have some sources that you like? Do you want to recommend to us to browse through for sort of native things?
Well, one I want to mention, and I think I mentioned it before, is Gardens North. She's up in Canada. And she, it's not exclusively natives, but very, very heavy on natives.
Oh.
And especially if you're in cold climates, because she's up in Ottawa, so good zone 4 or 5 hardy stuff. And she just announced she's retiring after this year. So this is the last chance. So I would definitely check out her list. It's lots of really interesting plants you're not going to find anywhere else. Most of perennials and a lot of natives. So it's sort of, this is your last chance to get access to a lot of really, really cool things.
Okay. Gardens North. Okay.
Gardens North. And then Prairie Moon is another great one.
Oh, yeah.
For native plants, native perennials, that I really love. And they do also, they sell a lot of seeds and also some, you know, plants and bare root stuff. So if you don't want to start from seed, they have a lot of options there. And then the other one is All Plains, which is Alplains.
Oh,
and
yes.
And he's out in, I think, Colorado. So he's more like Western U.S. So depending on what climate zone you're in, they're better. If you're in a drier climate, they have a lot of really great native penstemons and all these things that are really well adapted to sort of Western drier climates. Struggle sometimes in the eastern wet, but some really beautiful, interesting native plants from him.
You know, totally out of left field, I realize, remembering from looking through the seed catalogs last night, nigella. Have you grown nigella in a long time? Do you know nigella? Was it nigella damascena or whatever? Like, okay, so when I grew it a million years ago, we kind of had these puffball-like things and this ferny foliage. It was close to the ground, and then it had blue flowers. And I see there's a different species. I think it's nigella papillosa maybe or something.
Yeah.
And it's kind of purpley color and some doubles and extra showy seed pods. And have you tried any of nigellas recently? Any nigellas recently?
So I actually tried, again, I did some of those as a fall sowing down here.
Oh, cool.
I've grown them in the spring. Yeah. So I was like, oh, nigella, I haven't grown that in years.
Me
and
too.
I love them. The first time I fell in love with them, I saw a picture, I think it was like an English gardening book when I was a teenager.
Yeah.
And they planted them around bearded irises.
Oh.
And then the bearded iris flowers were like floating in this froth of, because the foliage is just so light and
it's
fluffy.
It's beautiful, and, yeah.
So I hadn't grown them in years, and then someone said, "Oh yeah, we can plant them in the fall down in the south." So I sowed a bunch of them this fall. We'll see how that does. And I saved, you know, sow some of them in the fall, and I'll sow them again in the spring. I think there's something that doesn't transplant well. You really need this kind of sow directly in place, but it's really beautiful.
Yeah. Oh, well, I'm so glad to speak to you about some of your favorite flowers, or at least the ones you're going to try this year, Joseph Dukanovich. And we're going to have a book giveaway, because if people try growing them like you do and let a little cross-pollination happen, they can even maybe benefit from reading and owning a copy of Plant Breeding for the Home Gardener, right?
Everybody needs a copy.
Absolutely. So we're going to have a giveaway, too, with a transcript on the blog. I'm glad to speak to you, and I hope we'll speak again soon.
All right. Great talking to you.
Underwriting support from High Mowing Organic Seeds, the first independently owned farm-based seed company proudly serving organic gardeners and farmers with 100% organic and non-GMO vegetable, herb, and flower seeds. HighMowingSeeds.com/awaytogarden. Underwriting support from Timber Press, your go-to resource for books in gardening and nature. Whether you're a new gardener, a professional at the top of your field, or a reader interested in the wonders of the natural world, their books are there to help you grow. TimberPress.com.
Now, don't miss an episode. You can subscribe free to the podcast version on Stitcher or iTunes. Find me anytime at awaytogarden.com or on facebook.com/awaytogarden. And happy gardening meantime.
A Way to Garden with Margaret Roach is a joint production of awaytogarden.com and the smallest NPR station in the nation, Robin Hood Radio.